all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Wisconsin Sense for this Friday, April 14th, and it is another beautiful day on Lake Wissota. Glad to have you along for the next couple of hours here on this April 14th, 414, 414. Yeah, if you're listening near Milwaukee, if you're listening on WAUK or stations nearby, you know that this is 414 day down in the 414. So we'll talk briefly this hour about the chance for the Milwaukee area to toot its own horn. We'll review some of the deals and events that come with it. But then it leads us to ask, how could we have a 715 day on July 15th here up north? Now, there some folks do that already, but I mean, let's build this thing. Let's make it better. Makes me wonder what should be mandatory on a bucket list that showcases life up north in the 715. So we're going to want your ideas either through phone calls or Facebook comments to get that. We'll also talk to Courier Newsroom National Correspondent Kia Vakil to help review this week's headlines around the country. We will also have, as usual on Fridays, Mark Jacob will help us go through national media coverage of this week's big stories. Dan Schumacher will take some time to talk about weekend sports with us. And at the top of the 7 o'clock hour, we'll get into a very serious discussion about gun violence and the lack of a red flag law in Wisconsin and how that very well could have prevented the shooting deaths of two law enforcement officers in Barron County last weekend by a man whose history was known. He was known to be armed, he was known to be violent, and he was known to make threats against the lives of law enforcement officers. And yet there is no red flag law mechanism in this state that could have prevented last weekend's tragedy. So whether it's for the serious items or the ones that are more about 715 day, our phone lines will be open from now till 8 o'clock at 844-967-2789 or 715-388-7155. If you're shy, don't want to talk on the phone, prefer using your keyboard, you can either send us an email, radio@upnorthnewswi.com, or you can comment on the Facebook pages where we run the live video stream of our show, and we do that over at the Up North News Facebook page, the Civic Media Facebook page, and the page for Bull Falls Radio, our station up in Wausau. So we would love to have your input on any and all things. So with that, we head down to the 608. I don't know if they have a 608 day on June 8th, but Mr. Aaron Zommers is there. Aaron, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I believe they do have a 608 day, but I'm not 100% sure since I'm not a Madison native. I'm from the 920.
You're from the 920. Where? Do we have a September 20th 920 day up there?
Not that I'm aware of, but okay. I could be wrong.
I remember we were talking to Kristen Lyerly yesterday, and she was saying, yeah, there should be that. And one for the new area code up there. Was it, I think it's 534 or something?
Something like that.
And I had to remind her that we don't have a March 34th, so we can't do that, but we can do one in September. But we're gonna keep our remarks focused on the 715 day and what makes that work. Now, over to sports now. The Brewers were winners on the West Coast last night. They beat San Diego 4-3 in 10 innings. Rowdy Tellez hit a sacrifice fly in the 10th. Rowdy had also homered in the first. The game shouldn't have necessarily gone to extra innings. The Brewers were up 3-1 in the bottom of the eighth, but Matt Busch gave up a two-run homer. The Brewers could have maybe tried to win it in the top of the ninth, but the Padres have this relief pitcher by the name of Josh Hader. Remember how we got rid of him for, I think, a bag of beans? I don't know, Aaron, is that putting it generously that we got a bag of beans for Josh Hader last year?
I'd definitely say that's pretty generous. I'd say maybe like a handful of beans, not even a bag.
Yeah, so Josh Hader, who was admittedly going through the yips at the time, but settled down, and he got the Brewers out 1-2-3 in the ninth. And then there's a lot of new pitchers we're going to have to get to know. Colin Ray, not the country singer from the 90s, but the 32-year-old from Class AAA Nashville, who made his first Brewers start. That makes him the seventh pitcher already to start a game for the Brewers. You'll recall that Jansen Junk came up and replaced the injured Brandon Woodruff the other day. Ray did already. He went 5 2/3, two hits, one run, six strikeouts. And then the save, the first ever career save for Joel Pamps. I've never heard that name before, Aaron. Apparently, I need to pay more attention in spring training.
Well, I Joel haven't Pamps, heard it before anything? Either. I haven't heard it either, which I'm sure is very shocking.
So anyway, we're going to be learning all the various pitchers as they try to give others rest and other people move up and down. Brewers bats were a little quiet again yesterday. I mean, you did have Rowdy doing well, but you know, Yelich went 0-for-4. Garrett Mitchell grounded out three times, all with two men on base. So the bats need to wake up a bit more on the rest of this West Coast road trip. They will play in San Diego again tonight at 8:40, and then a couple of games in the 3 o'clock hour, I believe, on Saturday and Sunday afternoons. And then from there, it's up to Seattle for games on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday before a day off Thursday. And then this is the weird thing. I mean, interleague baseball, I'm okay with it. I don't imagine, Aaron, you have any quibble with it, but it's weird that the next homestand has got three different series against American League teams, three against Boston, three against Detroit, and then three against the LA Angels of Anaheim. I'm fine with it. The Brewers used to be an American League team, but it still strikes me as a little odd.
Yeah, it's still kind of weird. They don't have college teams going on the NFL. Not exactly the same, but still.
That's definitely, yeah, that's a way to look at it. So there's your Brewers update, winning in 10 innings. All right, we'll take a break. We'll have a couple of headlines, but mostly we'll focus on this 4-1-4 day and how we would make for a nice 7-1-5 day come July. All that and more on a Friday here on Up North News Radio.
Which one you want the most, them opera stars or me? Milwaukee, here I come from Nashville, Tennessee.
You got to say, I'm not really familiar with the John Prine song about Milwaukee. Apparently he's written a few different songs that mention Milwaukee in there, but on this 4-1-4 day, we thought that'd be appropriate to put up. Again, a reminder that coming up this morning, we've got Key of Akil in just a few minutes at 6:30, Mark Jacob at 7:30, Dan Schumacher at 7:50, and State Representative Jody Emerson will join us at about 7:05. Coming up next week, guests include State Representative Katrina Shanklin. We'll be talking about Earth Day coming up and clean water issues, and Matt Rothschild from the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign will be here as well to look back at the very expensive state Supreme Court race and what kinds of things we can advocate for from here to try to clean up our political system in Wisconsin, which, again, is not likely in the short term given the makeup of the legislature, but that doesn't mean we can't keep advocating and working toward it. All right, so we mentioned this 4-1-4 day because it's, April 14th. This is one of those cute things you can do with the old school zip codes. Now area codes can be, any three numbers. But back in the day, for technical reasons we don't really have time for, telephones, once upon a time, your area code had to be like, have a zero or a one in the middle of it, which is why you have like 608 or 715 or 414. And it was a mark of regionalism. If you said that you were from the 612, people knew you were from the Twin Cities area. If they said, some of the ones on the East and West Coast are equally well known. Anyway, 414 now is primarily the Milwaukee area. And so folks have talked about, having a 414 day. Now they do that on April 14th. And over at upnorthnewswi.com, we looked into some of the ways that people are marking that. It's either it's an excuse for shopping, you can get some discounts on things, or there are some various events that you can go to. The city, for example, of Milwaukee has an official 414 store. They will be raising their signature 414 flag at City Hall at 8 o'clock this morning. There will be free coffee and free burritos from Bel Air Cantina. There will be folks from Milwaukee Pro Soccer there for a meet and greet and to give away some free goodies. Over at the Harley-Davidson Museum, there will be cheap tickets and new food. The first 120 people who stop by the Motor Bar and Restaurant will get a complimentary can koozie. There will be a special on burgers. There's live music over at the Cactus Club. Let's see. There are a couple of several bars that would normally charge, I think, more for cover, but it's just $4.14 per person. There will be, you can get a free brandy old fashioned from Central Standard Craft Distillery, and much more. So take a look at our site if you're anywhere near the 414 for some of the deals that you will find there. But it led me to ask, what should be on a 715 bucket list? And folks in Wausau have taken 715 Day to heart. There have been things going on there. I think that's great. What I'm advocating for is to build that. The 715 is a big area. It's, you know, pretty much all of northern Wisconsin. So we're talking about Ashland, Bayfield, Superior, down to Eau Claire, over to Hudson. It covers a lot of ground. But I asked on my personal Facebook page last night, I said, you know, if you were putting together a 715 day bucket list, what would be on it? My example was Amnicon Falls State Park. I still haven't been there. I would love to see the waterfalls there. It always looks so beautiful in the pictures. And so that's, you know, for somebody who has covered news and run for political office and done all kinds of things, I feel like I know most of the nooks and crannies up north, but there's still plenty of places I haven't stopped. And then there's places you have. As far as I'm concerned, if 715 Day were a bingo card, the free space would be the Big Muskie up in Hayward. You know, the big fiberglass one. You can go up the steps and you're in the Muskie's mouth where you take a picture. I mean, that's like the, to me, that's the quintessential postcard if you were doing a 715 day. But then I asked, you know, what else would be on there? Now, keep in mind, the bulk of folks that I know are either in the Chippewa Valley or the Wausau area, and then a few folks up in Ashland Bayfield. So you're going to notice there's a bit of a bias toward the places of people that see my question. But I'd love to get your thoughts as well, which, again, you can either give us a ring at 844-967-2789 or 715-388-7155, or comment right on the Facebook page for Up North News or for Bull Falls Radio or for Civic Media, and we'll put those up there. So while you think about that and think about your responses, I'll share some of the ones that were given to me. For my friend Jenny, who was born and raised in Eau Claire, she, of course, leads off things, as you might expect, with the Leinenkugel Brewery up in Chippewa Falls and Olson's Ice Cream, very famous there in Chippewa Falls. From Maggie, we get Sam's Pizza in Wausau, the Wausau Mine Company, Red Eye Brewing in Wausau. I've been there many times. I have never had a bad meal at Red Eye Brewing. There's Rib Mountain State Park and an ice cream cone at Bricks in Wausau. My friend Kim gives a few more obscure ones that I wouldn't have thought to put on here, but she notes eating at the Delta Diner in Delta, buying a book at Redberry Books and Cable, getting ice cream at West's in Hayward, getting fudge at Tremblay's up there, Sunday brunch at the Garmisch Resort on Lake Namekagon, root beer floats at the Milltown Drive-In, and then, of course, all of Bayfield and Madeline Island, and hiking in Interstate Park in St. Croix Falls. And it has been a very long time since I've been to Interstate Park, and that's a good reminder. I may have to put the top down on the Jeep and go on a road trip there. Big thanks to Steve for reminding us of Marietta Gouda in Thorpe. I did not even know I liked Gouda until I had some from Marietta, and now there's always plenty of that in our fridge here. He also notes the world's largest round barn in Marshfield. Yes, been there. Great little attraction. There's also very charming Osceola, writes Allison, and all the little towns along the St. Croix River Valley. Let's see. Here's Bob, Rib Mountain State Park, and the view from Wisconsin's High Point. True. Let's see. There is, I like this note from Frances, who notes that there is a pretty decent-sized 715 celebration in Wausau. She calls it a rather alternative affair, kind of like a block party that got out of hand, you know, in a good way. There's somebody named Katie from Wausau, I believe she might be the mayor, who notes getting a tattoo at the 715 Tattoo Collective. Would not have been on my bucket list for the 715, but I appreciate that very much from Katie. There's all kinds of different ways you can celebrate 715 Day. Chris Ann, love this suggestion. The Loyal Corn Fest. Of course, the Loyal Corn Fest. It's nothing but troughs of free roasted corn smothered in melted grassland butter. And as she notes, it cannot be beat. Mark from the Sack of all places has some ideas on 715 Day. Hey, Mark, how you doing?
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm not in the Sack right now, but still at the hospital. But Patterson State Park, I grew up in far northern Wisconsin there.
Uh-huh.
About 7 miles east of Patterson State Park, and you got the Big Falls there with the accompanying gorge. You've got the Little Falls, which is just a beautiful little falls. Caught some trout underneath that from time to time. But it's a beautiful, beautiful park. I mean, it is just learned to swim there. Amnicon Falls is a nice falls too, but I put my vote in for Patterson State Park.
I like that. All right. I appreciate that, Mark. I hope you get out of that hospital soon and can do a little bit of a road trip like this.
Yeah, I hope to get back. Well, I get up there every year for deer season, but got some little bit of property there, but it's just gorgeous up there.
Oh, absolutely. All right, Mark. Hey, thanks. Glad you're feeling a bit better. Keep improving and have a good weekend.
Thanks, all right, brother. Have a good weekend too.
Thank you so much. All right. From my friend Susan, she's in the Shell Lake area. So it shouldn't surprise you that she notes the Shell Lake Arts Center, the Shell Lake Water Skiing Show, Chetek. I mean, it's great. It's such a great little small town to go to for the weekend. Northwind Book and Fiber in Spooner. Let's see, the Wisconsin Great Northern Railroad train rides in Trigo. Here she notes Patterson State Park and Campground Superior Community Theater and Louis Fine Meats in Cumberland. And my friend Richard, who lives out of state now, but he keeps in mind there's something that's really perfect for the heritage of this part of the 715, the Chippewa River Baseball League. Now, I don't live too far away from Tilden, little tiny community on 53 just north of Chippewa Falls. But Tilden had been part of the Chippewa River League for decades and decades. And that was the entertainment was going to it's Brazina's. That's kind of a, dance hall turned into bar and restaurant now, but there's a baseball field there. Judy Clark, who I co-anchored the news on Channel 13 with for all those years. And she's still there. She's from right in that area and talked about how as a girl, that was the thing is you went over there and you watched all the various visiting teams come into Tilden. And that was your entertainment was watching a baseball game there. So, anything related to the Chippewa River League would be a good thing. I certainly want to get back up to Exceland. We've got friends up there who have a bar and restaurant that I would very much recommend. And again, it's going to be one of our go-tos is to go to the Buckhorn up in Exceland. Fantastic food there. Carol in Madison has some ideas for the 715. So let's go down to the 608 and talk to her. Carol, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. I've spent a lot of time in the 715, including the 6 years at UW-Eau Claire.
No, nice.
But
okay.
Before you were there.
Yes.
Pardon?
A little bit. A little bit, perhaps.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what's on your list?
Well, the ice castle up in the Eagle River in the winter. The fiberglass loon up in Mercer. The ferry to La Pointe from Bayfield. Let's see.
I like that you mentioned the fiberglass loon because, I mean, we have to be like the center of the universe for fiberglass animals, whether it's loons or the big muskie or every heckle's big steer had a fiberglass big steer in front of it. We love our fiberglass animals, don't we?
Well, and there's a pink elephant off one of the interstate exits by DeForest.
That's right. And you can't go out west without as many Sinclair stations as possible have a green fiberglass dinosaur, the old Brontosaurus thing there. But yeah, we've got a lot of them around here. Anything else on your list?
Well, outside of I think it's Edgar, there's the 45th parallel, which is then the
The center of the Western Hemisphere and the Northern Hemisphere. That's right.
Yes.
And have you been to it? Because isn't it the most underwhelming thing ever? It's like it's just one of those geographical markers and very little else. But I mean, it's the significance of the point, right? You know, it's not like there's an amusement park there or anything like that, you know?
No, not at all. It's very nondescript. However, mm-hmm. if you go there, then you go into it's Poniatuski, I think, is where the bar
yep.
is. And you have to go into the bar and sign the ledger that you've actually been out to the shrine.
See, I haven't done that. Carol, thank you so much. We got to head to a break here, but I appreciate all those ideas. Thanks, everybody. We're going to work on this for a great 715 day up north. Welcome back to Up North News Radio on a Friday morning. Good to have Kia Vakil back with us. Kia, how are you?
I am well, Pat. Good to be back.
Good to have you back after a little break here, jumping right back into the deep end of the news pool, covering things for Courier Newsroom and Up North News for our political team from your home base out there in California. So we appreciate the visit as always. So you come back and find out that here in Wisconsin, Senator Tammy Baldwin announced on Wednesday morning that she's going to be running for a third term. Not totally unexpected. But since you're here as a national correspondent, we thought we'd talk a bit about 2024 from the standpoint of the national map for the U.S. Senate. Because while Tammy Baldwin is certainly favored right now, there's no strong Republican opponent at all. Democrats control the Senate, but not by much. And 2024 doesn't look like a great year for all the other states that are going to be in play next year, right?
No, it's a pretty brutal map in the Senate for Democrats. So right now they have a 51-49 majority, but they have incumbents in Montana, Ohio, and West Virginia up for re-election in 2024, and those are three states that have become increasingly red over the years. And in a year with a presidential race on the ballot, the odds of them holding all three of those seats are very, very slim. They can afford to lose one. They cannot afford to lose two, and certainly three. And where Tammy Baldwin comes into play is, if they any year where they're losing Tammy Baldwin's seat, they've lost the majority. And like you said, she is a favorite. She's an electoral powerhouse. No one has come close to beating her in her previous races, but her victory would be an essential for Democrats to have any chance of holding the Senate.
Well, and then of course she's up along with these other states. Their 6-year cycle this time around coincides with a presidential election year, and so their wagons are very much hitched to Joe Biden's star. If he does not have a good campaign, those folks who are taking Tammy Baldwin for granted had better think twice. There's a lot here that's out of the control of the Senate candidates when you're talking about a presidential year.
Definitely. And what will be interesting is, we've already seen it a little bit from Joe Manchin, who he's probably got the toughest race in the country of any Democrat. So we've already seen him try to create distance from Biden, which is probably strategically smart in a state that went for Trump by 30-40 points. But you're right that the economic news needs to be strong for John Tester or Sherrod Brown to have a chance. And the economy, inflation is cooling. The new report just came out today on March, and it's down for the ninth month in a row year-over-year rate, and is back to sort of where it was in May 2021. Obviously things aren't perfect. Eggs are still exorbitantly expensive, but things are trending in the right direction. And that certainly is good news if you're Joe Biden or an incumbent Senate Democrat.
Meanwhile, the guy currently leading the pack for the Republicans, former President Trump, apart from, being arrested and arraigned and facing all kinds of other charges, is apparently is out there praising dictators again, letting people know that he admires strongmen and would love to be one of those authoritarians himself if given the chance.
Yeah, he did an interview, I believe it was last night with or earlier this week, Tuesday night, with Tucker Carlson of Fox News, who you know, and he told him basically that he was, he praised Vladimir Putin. He praised Kim Jong-un. These are guys who are dictators. North Korea is completely closed off from the rest of the world. We have very little idea what goes on there. But what we do know is that it's a authoritarian, extremely, you know, dangerous country for the people who live there and who dare to speak out against Kim Jong-un. Russia, you know, we know what Vladimir Putin has done over the past year. And, you know, that Trump continues to praise him and, you know, be very soft on him, despite his litany of horrific things, says a lot about Donald Trump. You know, like you said, he's a wannabe authoritarian. He tried to overturn an election in many ways, legal and then very illegal. And now he's facing accountability in New York and potentially future accountability in Georgia and from the DOJ special counsel. But yeah, you know, he wishes he could act as Vladimir Putin and Kim Jong-un does because he tries to.
Well, because he was essentially, you know, the dictator of, you know, the Trump organization, you know, yeah. And that's when you have that kind of power, you just, in his mind, he thinks you can just apply that to the government. And, you know, as he learned from voters, that's not the way it works. Of course, he has a loyal base, but that loyal base appears to be shrinking all the time. You have Republicans looking at Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. And now this week, they're looking at a senator from South Carolina, and it's not Lindsey Graham.
No, it is Tim Scott, who is the only Black Senate Republican. He has announced an exploratory committee for the 2024 presidential campaign, which is not officially, you know, a campaign. It's sort of a soft launch. And he'll be the second candidate from South Carolina to run if he announces, in addition to former Governor Nikki Haley. And, you know, what you see them aiming for is the non-Trump, non-DeSantis lane, which I think makes up about 20 to 30% of the Republican primary base. So I don't, you know, the Republican Party where a Tim Scott or a Nikki Haley could win the nomination, I don't see that as the Republican Party that exists today. You know, their standard bearer is a guy who's being indicted, who tried to overturn an election, who wants to bomb Mexico, apparently, who praises dictators. And, you know, Tim Scott is certainly not moderate or liberal by any means. He's a conservative, but he is a conservative who, you know, would have run in 2012, who would have made a lot more sense 15 years ago. He's going to try to run an upbeat campaign. He is Black. And as a Black conservative, he's, you know, leaning into that, which is smart, but again, probably not what the base wants.
Well, except for the one thing that I know he was getting pressed on was to name any policy differences between him and Donald Trump. And I don't believe he's come up with an answer to that yet.
No. And because there really isn't one, there is no policy in the Republican Party. The ones that they've tried to do are extremely unpopular, which is basically raising the retirement age for Social Security, banning abortion, hideously unpopular, as we're seeing pretty much every election, and attacking voting rights and LGBTQ people. And none of those are popular. And those are all Trump caused or Trump adjacent. There isn't really a difference between Tim Scott and Trump policy wise. It's all in demeanor and rhetoric. And, you know, it is the Trump party. You know, there might be, like you said, the base is shrinking, but he's still got a stranglehold over 40 to 60% of Republican voters, depending on how the question is asked. So, you know, until there's a new power base in that party, they're all just in his shadow.
Right. With a lot of center right voters, feeling rather politically homeless at this point. And you mentioned the abortion issue. And of course, we're about a week away now from the ruling by that judge that tried to overturn the FDA approval of mifepristone, one of the abortion medications. You have states now that are reacting in different ways. Some of them are stocking pills. The red states are doing one thing. The blue states are doing something else. I mean, it is two Americas just in reaction to that decision and what they're doing about it.
Yeah, I mean, that decision is as extreme as a judge has ever made, arguably, in recent years. And the reaction you're seeing, the very different responses from blue states and red states, very much highlights the differences, you know, the division in this country right now. And that case is especially dangerous because not only the threat it poses to women everywhere, but to anyone who takes any drug anywhere. You know, if it's upheld, which I will say is unlikely, even with this Supreme Court, this decision is so radical that I would be very shocked if they upheld it, because it effectively would allow any doctor in the country, anyone. So it could be some anti-vax crank. It could be Rand Paul. They could sue the FDA to get an antidepressant revoked. They could sue the FDA to get a cancer treatment revoked if this decision is upheld. It effectively creates a mechanism that could destroy the healthcare and pharmaceutical industries.
Well, and not to mention vaccines. I mean, my goodness, the anti-vaxxers, what this exactly would do for that. Just tremendous danger that could come if this ruling were to go through. We talked about South Carolina, and I want to go to North Carolina briefly, only because there was some national media attention, a New York Times article about North Carolina. We've mentioned it before that Republicans there have pivoted, and they have now embraced Medicaid expansion. They understand why it's necessary and to stop having that temper tantrum about the Affordable Care Act passing. There wasn't any specific mention of Wisconsin in the article, only that, you know, there are 10 states, now only 10 states that have an expanded Medicaid, which is called Badger Care here. But the article, you know, indicates, well, more and more Republicans are understanding the wisdom of this. I don't know that I'm necessarily seeing hard and fast signs of that in Wisconsin yet, but you're the one who watches North Carolina for Courier Newsroom. And I would guess, what, maybe a year ago, you probably wouldn't have predicted that this was going to happen.
No, I mean, there have been small signs in the last few years that it's been building. And I think there's a couple factors for that. One is, the piece touches on this too, is rural hospitals in North Carolina and rural healthcare has just been gutted. And Medicaid expansion has been shown to really help rural communities keep their hospitals and healthcare facilities open. And two, I think the further out we get from Barack Obama being affiliated with it, unfortunately, the more likely Republicans are to support it, because probably for really ugly political reasons, to be frank. But I think the reason that's not happening in Wisconsin is because, you know, North Carolina is has a history of gerrymandering that rivals Wisconsin, but the current map in Wisconsin is so extreme.
Worst in the country, baby. Yep,
exactly.
We got that.
I think that's also an underrated part of it, is Republicans have no reason to moderate in Wisconsin. And that's not to say that Republicans in North Carolina are moderate. They are not. But there is a little bit more of an incentive there, because, you know, they have gotten their maps struck down repeatedly in courts. And in Wisconsin, that may be more of a incentive in the future. Now that the Supreme Court has flipped control, you could see there being a little more strategic thought about expanding Medicaid, because it's extremely popular. And if you're faced with a fair map, you're going to want to do things that appeal to voters rather than just sit on your laurels and do absolutely nothing like Robin Voss and his allies have done.
Let's end on more of an upbeat note and end as we began, talking about 2024. And that is the immense turnout of younger voters, young adult voters in the state Supreme Court election last week. We certainly saw an uptick in the midterms last November as well. And so, Kia, as you've looked at these other states, obviously they haven't had something, you know, like Wisconsin. This is probably the biggest race of 2023. But there still don't seem to be any indications that this is a one-and-done situation, or in Wisconsin's case, two-and-done, you know, a one-and-done situation for younger voters, that this is perhaps a permanent trend that, you know, people are going to be watching in 2024.
Yeah, I mean, the longtime trope of young voters is they lean Democratic, but they don't really vote. And there was the piece in the Washington Post highlights how groups specifically targeting young voters to inform them about the election put in a lot of work on this election and saw huge turnout shifts, increases in across college campuses in Wisconsin. And because of the issues that are dominating it, such as abortion, those populations voted overwhelmingly for Janet Protasiewicz. Young voters are, you know, Gen Z voters, younger millennials are overwhelmingly progressive. They care about issues like climate change, gun safety, abortion rights, things that Republicans are actively fighting against. And, you know, they're watching their classmates get killed. They're watching, you know, their parents' Social Security be threatened. They're watching the planet be ravaged by policies that Republicans support. So, you know, the question is activating them, because there's a lot of hopelessness out there. And I understand that. And if you've watched the political system of the last 40 years, there's not a ton of reason to be optimistic if you're a young voter. But the more they get engaged, the more that groups focus on them, you know, the more they are voting. And that's extremely, there's a lot of hope there, because if they vote and, you know, if politicians actually are elected and commit to, you know, carry out what they've promised, we'll be in a lot better place 10, 20, 30 years down the road.
Courier Newsroom national political correspondent Kia Vakil joining us from Los Angeles. Kia, thanks so much. Have a great weekend.
You bet. You too.
For a little music break and history lesson for this Friday morning. Of course, the soulful sounds of Smooth. Michael McDonald with the Doobie Brothers scoring theirs. I know, you're thinking the same thing, aren't you? Where's Carolyn Fiddler?
Exactly. When we need her? Yep.
Carolyn, we miss you. Our favorite yacht rock aficionado. The Doobie Brothers scored their second number one hit with that tune, What a Fool Believes. While it was their 11th chart-topping hit, I shouldn't say chart-topping, their 11th hit to chart in the top 40, it was their only other number one besides Blackwater from 1974. Also on this April 14th, 1865, was the assassination of President Abraham Lincoln by John Wilkes Booth at Ford's Theater. He passed away the following day. This one is sad, but it was just so unusual, I had to pass it along. The heaviest hailstones ever recorded, each weighing more than 2 pounds, fell on a part of Bangladesh, killing 92 people.
That's insane. When I saw that on here, that is unbelievable.
I can't even imagine the weather phenomena that makes that happen, and then poor Bangladesh gets hit by so many things as it is. But yeah, 2 pound hailstones, crazy stuff. Loretta Lynn passed away last year. Her 90th birthday, 91st birthday would have been today. Of course, a classic of country music.
When I was born to coal miner's daughter.
Also on the birthday list today, Pete Rose is, 82 years old today. Pete Rose, still not in the Hall of Fame, but he will be, just once he's no longer upon this mortal coil, I guess you could say, essentially getting that life sentence for betting on his own games. Even if you're betting to win, you're still betting on your own games. This day in 1958 was the birth of Peter Capaldi, so he's 65 today. Scottish actor, known for his work in Doctor Who. All right, now we get to some musical genres that are a little bit beyond, you know, your genial and rapidly elderly host here. Judas Priest released their album British Steel on this day in 1980, including this hit. All I can imagine is that Aaron and I kind of do our best Beavis and Butthead, and we just start rocking our heads back and forth to this, because that's all I can just think of Beavis and Butthead when I think of stuff like this. Iron Maiden released their self-titled debut album on this day in 1980 as well. Now to 1986, where LL Cool J became the first solo rapper with a certified gold album, when his album Radio sold over 500,000 copies, including Rock the Bells. So that was 1986. Let's move to 1988. Now, earlier this week, we mentioned Public Enemy and their third album, but it was on this day in 1988 that they released their second album, It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back. And it is often cited as one of the greatest hip-hop albums of all time, with cuts like Rebel Without a Pause. You want styling? You know it's time again. D, the enemy, telling you to hear it. They praise the music. It's time to play the lyrics. Some say no to the album. The And then we move up a couple of years to 1990. And I had to make sure that Aaron didn't put up something, you know, just to punk me. It says here, the number one record this day in 1990 was Tommy Page with I'll Be Your Everything. And I played it, and I'm not even going to play it for you because it's so schlocky. It's just like this little love song. I have no memory of it. But I should also state that I have no cultural touchstones from 1988 to 1992 or so, because that's when both of our daughters were born. And so everything is Raffy and Sesame Street and Disney princesses. And I didn't follow anything in movies or music. So you're just going to have to, I'm going to take you at your word that some guy named Tommy Page and I'll Be Your Everything was the number one record this day in 1990. Did you listen at all to it? Did you find it?
Not that one. No, I was just like, I've never heard of this. I'm going to guess that maybe Pat has.
No, I looked at it, it's like, and it just sounds like it blends in with every other adult contemporary song from 1990. And finally, this day in 2012, the Red Hot Chili Peppers, the Beastie Boys, Guns N' Roses, and Face were all inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Again, my great thanks for all the ideas that came up this hour on what should be on the perfect 715 day bucket list. And again, because this is 414 day, you can go to our article at upnorthnewswi.com and look for all the deals and specials that you could find there for 414 day. And then, you know, we'll talk about 608 day at some point here as well. But I just thought we'd represent the Northwoods for a time here on this Friday morning. All right. The next thing I want to point out or talk about is an article that was in the Wisconsin Examiner this week from Henry Redman, who calls our attention to the next potential crisis in Wisconsin government. And it deals with the upcoming expiration of the term of office for the administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission, Megan Wolf. Megan Wolf, remember yesterday we talked about how the entire county election office at a place in Virginia, just they all up and quit after some right-wingers accused them of treason. Treason, you know, based in nothing whatsoever. And that, you know, we've had great public servants being denigrated, insulted, threatened. Well, in Wisconsin, that's Megan Wolf, who has done an admirable job of staying above the fray, making sure people know that Wisconsin elections are safe, they are secure, they are accurate. And yet she constantly had to correct misinformation coming from Republican politicians. Well, now her term is coming up here. And so even though progressives are about to take the majority of the Wisconsin State Supreme Court, meaning the State Supreme Court will no longer be there just as a rubber stamp for Republican legislators, it is very possible that the Wisconsin Elections Commission could go without an administrator for a while. Why? Well, for background, in case you haven't heard this already, when the Wisconsin Elections Commission was created, it was created by Republicans intentionally to be split 3-3, 3 Republicans and 3 Democrats. And so there are a lot of deadlocked votes, and there could very easily be a deadlock or repeated deadlocks until they can agree on an administrator for the Elections Commission, which means that for a time, legislative leadership would have a bit of an advantage on what happens with election administration in Wisconsin. Should we have a Wisconsin Elections Commission set up for gridlock 3-3? No, we should not. We had something much better before, the Government Accountability Board, but Republicans and the conservative state Supreme Court quickly dismantled it when it got a little too close to investigating the potential illegalities of then Governor Scott Walker. More with Representative Jody Emerson next. You're up north.